Okay, well, I'm going to ask you a question, and I really want you to respond to this question, and that is, what really moves you? What motivates you? What makes you act on something you like, something you feel, whatever, you know, it's, what moves you? What gets you motivated? Anybody? Just shout it out. Helping people, that motivates you? Okay. What? I still didn't hear you, Chris. Deadlines, okay, yes. Yes, that pressure. Karen? Injustice, okay, great. Anything else?
Love.
Chocolate. Anything else? A good book, okay. Yes. Care. Okay, good. Anything else?
Sunshine.
Yeah, we do kind of feel better when the sun's out, don't we? Especially when it's cooler, not quite as hot as some of the days that we've had. I don't always feel motivated when it's 90 degrees out. I'm motivated to stay inside. Anything else? Yes?
Work.
Okay. Jan? Okay. Okay. All right. These are all good answers. Anything else? Yes? Somebody that's threatening to take stuff away from you. That's a motivator. Lynn. Being at peace. Okay. All right. Anybody else?
Money.
Money. Okay. Molly. Seeing that there's a successful outcome. Yes, Diane. Truth. Wow. What was?
Kindness.
Joy. Yes.
Creating something.
Wow, you guys have all kinds of answers here. This is great. What Judy says, when I get on a roll with things, you know, it's like for a while I'm kind of sedentary, and then all of a sudden I get up, it's like I got things I got to do. And she says, when I start that, she says, I don't try to stop you, because you get all this stuff done all of a sudden. It's like, and for the entire day, once I get home, I'm on a roll from doing point A to point B to point C. And she may say something to me, but she won't do it to distract me, because she knows if she does, I stop. And I just go. And it's like, you know, I have this goal. I want to do these things. You know, when somebody shows me something new that I really think is, oh, that's really great, I want to do that, then I develop this passion that I want to do those things, and I start to learn more about it, and I read about it, and I put it to practice, and I do whatever it is that I can to make myself better at doing whatever it happens to be. You know, that's kind of that passion, that desire, that drive that moves us. And today in our gospel reading, we hear about Jesus, who is encountered by a lawyer who is just, he's testing him. He's not interested in getting the correct answer. He's interested in seeing if he can trip Jesus up. And so he asks this question about what he has to do to receive eternal life. And so, you know, and he knows what he needs to do. He's got the law down. He knows exactly what it is that the law commands him, to love your neighbor, or love your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. He knew that. And so when Jesus says, you've answered correctly, then he asks the question, and who is my neighbor? Now that becomes a bit of a trick, because in reality, just like as the kids were responding to me and saying, well, you don't live next door to me, you're not my neighbor. And we kind of have that understanding that where we live, that's our neighborhood. That's, you know, actually it's interesting in nowadays that even among our neighbors, we don't know each other as well as maybe we. I knew in growing up in my neighborhood, we knew everybody. I mean, 5, 6, 7 houses down the road, we knew everybody who lived there. They knew us. They knew all the kids. They would call us by our first name. Sometimes they'd call us other things if we weren't behaving right. But, you know, that that was the understanding also among the Jews, that their neighbors were those who basically lived like them, that believed like them. They were in the same community. They were of the same nature. They all worshiped the same God. And certainly, when Jesus throws this thing about the Samaritan in, there would have been no adjective. There would have been no good that would have preceded that, because there was no good Samaritans, according to the Jews. That becomes what we call it later. Because you understand, and we've talked about these things, but it's worth reminding us that these folks that were called Samaritans were distant cousins of the Jews. They were people who were actually came from Jewish roots. They came from same families. But what happened was at one period of time when all these nations would, you know, because of where the Jewish nation was located, that all these nations converged there. It was kind of the crossroads. And it was an important place to occupy and because you can control trade that way. And so we had nation after nation that would take over. And part of the Jewish community was destroyed by some of these nations in the northern areas. And what happened was the remnant that was left over began to intermarry with others, not Jews, but people that, you know, settled in the area. They may have worshipped, they were pagans, or maybe they didn't worship God at all. But so they began to have different ideas, and they began to do things a little bit differently than what their ancestors did. And that made them unacceptable by the Jews. And so they didn't like them. It's kind of like maybe, you know, your close-knit family, though today it's a little more common than I can remember when growing up, that when one of my mom's sisters was the first to get divorced. Oh my gosh. You would have thought that that person became a Samaritan. She was different. And we all have family members that are like that, that are different, right? You know, we get together once a year, and for some of us, it's like, that's more than enough to get together with some of those family members. So when Jesus begins this story, and he throws this thing in about the Samaritan, if he was looking to get the Jews to respond in a more affirmative way, he probably should have said something to the degree after the priest and after the Levite, these two very knowledgeable people who, you know what their law is and know that they are called to love one another. But he should have just simply said, a simple Jewish layperson walked by. And they would have gotten the point, and they would have responded by saying, oh, that's what we're supposed to do. That's how we are to respond to our neighbor. But Jesus doesn't do that. He throws in this unwanted person, this untouchable individual, and he says the Samaritan is the one that came by. And what was so shocking about it, he is the one that shows mercy. It says, according to what Jesus speaks, it says that he shows him pity. He has pity on him. Now, in the interpretation of that language, it really means that his inner being, his bowels, he felt it within. That's how strong it was, that he was called to care for this person. He didn't qualify to say, is this person like me? Is this person who worships as I do? Or, you know, he didn't give him a questionnaire before he took care of him. He just simply was called by that pity to move on caring for this person in need. And that's what he does. And that's what's so shocking to those who would have been Jewish listening to this story, because to them, no Samaritan would ever do that. And no Jew would ever do that for a Samaritan. He was moved. This is not about what you should do or you shouldn't do. It's how do you respond to someone who is in need because of what we are called as Christians to do. Go back to the prayer for the day today. O Lord, your God, your mercy delights us, and the world longs for your loving care. hear the cries of everyone in need, and turn our hearts to love our neighbor with the love of your Son. The world longs for your loving care. I was reading a story about an African-American man who was homeless for 40-some years. And a group of clergy wanted him to come and speak about homelessness. He had since been able to make his way. He found his way, was able to find a home, able to take care of himself, and able to live at least a somewhat decent life. And so when he came to speak to the clergy, he began to say that, you know, when you're looking at homelessness, we have all kinds of places to eat. We have all kinds of money that provides for those kinds of things. And I believe that's true here in Grand Rapids, that there are places that somebody could go to every day and find some form of food. But what the man was saying is that ultimately what he missed the most was being treated as a human being. Being someone that someone else would sit and listen, that someone else would take his hand and hold it for a moment, that someone would just have conversation with him. He said, you know, there's many ways in which to feed the physical body, but to feed the spiritual person, it takes much more than just throwing money at it. It takes kindness. It takes pity. It takes that passion, that being moved from within, that our gut says to us, this person really needs to have human contact. Judy would watch when we were first married, and she would come back as she normally does, and she kind of stands off to the side after she's greeted me, and she watches as certain people walk by, and she says, you know, you hug an awful lot of older ladies. And I said, well, it's, you know, yeah, I guess I do, you know. And because in many cases, some of these folks don't have a hug all week. I don't normally initiate hugs because we need to be very careful about that as clergy. But if you initiate a hug with me, I will certainly reciprocate. But that's just because we need that contact. We need that connection. We need to know that somebody cares enough. You know, nothing makes me feel better than when Judy holds my hand. Or someone says to me, you know, one of my kids, Dad, I love you. Or someone I don't even know sees that maybe I'm confused, and that happens a lot these days. But, you know, can I help you? Is there something I can do for you? And the fact that somebody was paying attention and appeared to them that I was a bit lost, and that I was, you know, I need, can you show me where to go here or whatever? To be moved to respond. Not to just simply sit or think about all the inconveniences that could be done to us by taking a moment out of our day to make that connection. You know, we excuse the priest and the Levite, and I realize this is just a story that Jesus tells, but it's such a common everyday occurrence. You know, you can see what they were thinking because, you know, to touch a person that was wounded and was bleeding would have meant that they would have had to go through all kinds of cleansing rituals in order to make themselves right. That would have been an inconvenience, let alone they didn't know whether this person was a Jew or not. But that shouldn't matter. Should matter. In this world today where we find ourselves actually even by persons in government who are driving us to alienate each other, to separate ourselves because of differences of opinion is crazy. When we as Christians are called to seek out ways to live with each other even in the midst of our differences. There have been communities through hundreds of years that have lived peaceably among each other that are Christian and Muslim. but because there are those who are politically motivated, or for whatever other reasons, they drive to push the differences to say that we cannot do these things. It's not permissible for African Americans to live with Caucasians, or Asians to be with African Americans. Who designed this? Other than the color of our skin, we are all designed the same. We all have two arms, two legs. We breathe. We have blood flowing through our veins in order that we live. We need to eat. We need to survive. We need to have that human contact, that connection, which is what God designed us to be. He put us here not to ignore each other, but that we may interact. And for those who feel that they can worship on their own in different places or out in the woods, maybe there is some sense of satisfaction, but that is not worship. Worship is interacting with your neighbor, even with those that you don't like. And we celebrate the fact that God brings us together in spite of our differences. And that when there is needs, that we are moved to respond to them. And so in a few days, we will be hosting folks who are homeless here in Grand Rapids. You know, how is that possible in today's world when there's so much money that is out there, and yet there are families who are lost, who are broken, who need others to reach out and give them hope, to give them care, to let them know that they are not alone in their struggles. And it doesn't matter which side of the polity divide that you may be on, we respond because this is a human need. And the same thing can be said on our southern border. The situations that we face and that we see how humanity is treated is not right. People who are kept from having water, just simply clean facilities, to have the ability to bathe, the ability to be able to simply live in some sense of decency. We're not talking about establishing the Hilton here. We're talking about providing basic provisions that all of us require in order to survive. And to think that by driving people away, that you're going to keep people from coming, it's not going to happen. If your life is threatened, if you feel that you are endangered in where you live, you are going to move and you will take whatever strides you need to do in order to survive. And the response that we have is to a human crisis. It's not democratic, it's not republican, it's none of those things. It's humanitarian. And we should be moved within our guts to respond. The same thing can be said about the way in which we deal with each other in racially divided times. There are so many ways in which we need to ask ourselves, who are our neighbors? Who are the people that we are called to serve? And when we realize it's everyone, even our enemies, because we have been told by Jesus that you love your enemies. That question out there on the billboard that says, are you ready to be a disciple? It really is a question that maybe we're not ready to answer. Because being a disciple is hard. It challenges us. It moves us. It makes us have to look at things in ways that we would prefer not to see. It pushes us into places we prefer not to go. It makes us have to deal with people that we do not want to have an association with. But that is Christ. Christ faced down his enemies, not with thunderbolts and lightning, not with armies, but he just overwhelmed them with love. Our call today, who is my neighbor? And I would hope that we can all say, well, everyone, even those I don't like. And I ask God to push me to provide for those that need help right now. And while I realize I cannot do it alone, I cannot do everything and make it all better, I know that it takes an entire world in order for that to happen. But just by one stone being thrown into that stillness in the lake, you see the ripples that it creates. And the more ripples there are, the more movement there is. So when you start having lots of people starting to toss stones into that lake, those ripples become waves. And soon there is change. Soon there is a reversal in the way in which people think. To realize that, yeah, I do need to care for other people. That it's not just about me taking care of myself. God has already done that through the gift of His Son, Jesus. His love has poured out to us so that we don't need to worry about what will happen to us. We know ultimately that when we come to meet our end, God will receive us. There's no question to that. That promise was given to you at your baptism. But in the process of that, we were taught not to be sponges, just to suck it all in, but that we are to be wrung out so that that water of that baptism is wrung out over the people in whom we encounter, so that they too may know of this generosity that God offers all of us in Christ. To offer hope. And while I don't wish to be pitied on, nor I'm sure you do either, but the idea and the understanding to have pity on someone is to be moved to the point that we respond. And when we ask, we say, Lord, have pity on me. God is moved, for He has done us a tremendous gift in Jesus. And may we also share that gift so that others may be moved as well. Feel it in the guts and be moved with passion. When you feel that nudge, respond. Amen.